Hey everyone, it's another Pure Nintendo KoopaCast. And yeah, after jumping around a bit, talking about predictions and directs and such, we're back to discussing games. And we have some biggies tonight. Doing Pokemon Chat, a little bit more Gen 2 and also Gen 3. And if you know me, you know I know very little about Pokemon. So thankfully we have some veterans on the cast. As usual, we have Justin here.
Hey, everyone.
And we also have a Pokemon Snap record holder. Cody's here.
How's it going, everyone?
Maybe that's a game we'll talk about eventually. But
Let me know. We'll talk about that one for hours.
Right now, we're diving into the Game Boy realm. We did talk a little bit about Gold and Silver at the end of the last Pokemon cast we did, but time get away with us, and we want to talk about it more. And we'll be doing a Ruby and Sapphire as well. So two generations of Pokemon in one Koopa cast. Buckle up.
Yeah.
guys, I gotta ask you, as someone who's not too familiar with these games, were you there at launch? Did you pick them up later in life? What about you, Justin? You want to kick us off?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely there at launch. This was the first Pokemon generation that I bought both games. My first Pokemon game was Pokemon Blue, but I didn't have Red and Blue. I just had Blue. I didn't actually get the Yellow Pikachu version. So Blue was the only one I had from Gen 1. But it made me such a fan, like when Gen 2, and I remember like looking online at news of the games coming out in Japan, because back then, you know, we're kind of spoiled nowadays. People probably can't remember that long ago, but the last several generations, Pokemon has been releasing the game simultaneously across the world, different regions. But back in the day, they couldn't do that, you know. There was like a localization period. So Gold and Silver, I think, came out in Japan. I want to say it was like a good 6 to 9 months before the US. I could be wrong. I have to look it up. But there was a pretty good lead time between Pokemon games coming out in Japan versus the US and elsewhere. But so I remember I would, you know, search online and, you know, see screenshots of the Japanese game and just, you know, look up what artwork, and I was just like, oh, this looks amazing. I was there day one for sure. I was very, very excited. And bought both of them, and mostly, like, you know, my brothers didn't have Game Boys, weren't playing it a whole lot at that point. I had a Game Boy Pocket and a Game Boy Color. But my friends had Game Boys, and, you know, we had link cables and things like that. So I kind of bought two copies. I was like, well, one of my friends can just play it on his. And, you know, you have neighbor friends that are like, maybe they're not getting the games right at launch. They have to wait till Christmas or that type of thing. And so getting both at launch and being able to play that. Of course, you had to wait till you got a little bit further in the game to enable, like, the link up play. And, you know, so you could trade. But anyways, was so excited when Gold and Silver came out. The box art on both of those was just really awesome too. I mean, they did a great job even with the initial games. Pokemon Blue, Blastoise on there, it was a great pose from him. Charizard, like, you know, you'd see that game on the shelves and you're just like, I want to know more about this game. And Gold and Silver, they had kind of a, you know, a little bit of that, like, you know, glittery shine to them a little bit too. Gold and Silver, they kind of leaned into that, you know, these being kind of these precious metals. And anyways, the box art was great. I always, like, was very careful with those boxes. Again, they're made of cardboard, but, you know, like, just opening the game, making sure I keep, like, the plastic sleeve and all this stuff. I was very fastidious even as a kid at that point. But I guess I was 12, 13, something like that. But, I was so excited about these games. I haven't really talked about the games at all, but just the memories of getting them and first playing them. But, Cody, what about you? What was your kind of first
experience? You brought me back. I think I was 12 or 13 as well when they came out. Mm-hmm. And to your point about it coming out earlier, I remember I was on the playground and some of the a kid I went to school with, he got his hand on some of the Japanese cards of Gold and Silver, mm-hmm. the Pokemon trading cards, and those were also like a huge thing, mm-hmm. way before it was even like we had an announcement date for when we get Gold and Silver. So I'd be like, wow, this is crazy mm-hmm. that these are coming out. Like, what are these? What's this, like a Totodile and Cyndaquil and all these guys?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is like a whole new world, because I was, you know, so young and obsessed with Pokemon. There wasn't a game like it with Red and Blue, and I played so much of each. And then to hear this new one was coming out with the whole new line of them, I was so jazzed up about that. I remember when I was playing Red and Blue, there was like, you know, the Game Shark rumors of like, how do you get Mew and all this. There's also mm-hmm. one for Meryl, and everyone called it Blue Pikachu. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first Pokemon that from the second generation that really got leaked to the mainstream of like, this is something that's coming up. And I was like, well, this thing is awesome. And mm-hmm. turned out not to be much of a factor going into it, but I thought that Meryl was really going to be like a powerhouse. The Zoom Meryl, I guess, is pretty cool now. Yeah. I absolutely loved those games. And the day they came out, I got Silver. And I was telling Trev when we announced this podcast was happening that Gold and Silver are top three games for me of all time. I just am obsessed with those games. I think they were the best Pokemon games, mm-hmm. like original games done in terms of like the layouts and everything. And legendaries, starters, we'll get on to all this, but I just thought for me they're the best Pokemon's ever been.
Wow. They were also top three for selling apparently across the Game Boy line.
Yep.
And best selling for Game Boy Color. So I should ask you guys, what was it like going from like the black and white of like Red and Blue to color? Like, did it really impress you?
Oh yeah, that, you know, that it's kind of funny looking back on it now, but that it was pretty huge at the time. Like, I was playing, again, I had Pokemon Blue and, you know, had the Game Boy Color at this point. So, you know, whenever you did play an original Game Boy game on Game Boy Color, you did get some color, right? Like, it was, you know, they would do some color additions, but it wasn't nearly like if it was a Game Boy Color game designed for the Game Boy Color. So Gold and Silver, it was just so rich a palette. Like, it was just really cool seeing all the, it did just make the designs of the Pokemon just pop, you know, when you're playing. Cody, you were mentioning Meryl. I think, wasn't Meryl the first Pokemon they show you when the professor comes on the screen? He's like, welcome to the world of Pokemon. And I think he uses Meryl there to introduce it. It's kind of funny how they do that. Sometimes the first Pokemon they introduce you to is not necessarily the most famous or mascot, or, you know, they kind of...
Nidorino and...
Nidorino. Yeah, it's kind of just interesting the ones they choose that the professor, you know, first introduces you to. You know, they're not typically the title Pokemon on the boxes or even in the intro sequence, but man, yeah, these games, like you said, just world design. I mean, it does seem like still some of the peak of the 2D you know, style Pokemon games, really. But
to that point too, I mean, you brought up like the colors. It wasn't just that, like, and again, it's so funny looking back at this now and be like, the graphics are great.
Yeah.
But like from Red and Blue, all the moves look the same from every Pokemon. Yeah. Like, I remember like Surf was just like these two like weird like water lines that would come up, and then the screen would have like a little graphic over it of like a wave.
Yeah.
But it's the Pokemon had individual, like, not movements, but like I remember Cyndaquil's like flame would flash, mm-hmm. and it was like, oh, that's so sick. Mm-hmm. Like a little hint of orange of the fire on its back, or like Suicune, like that blue was such like a deep blue. Like, there was some Pokemon that they had color that like I wasn't used to, that was so much more vibrant than the generation before, that was like, oh wow, this is really something too. Like the first time I saw like Crobat, I was like, oh, that's purple, so sick.
Yeah.
A bunch of different ones where they really kind of popped and stood out from the generations prior as well.
Yep.
Nice, man. I love the memories you guys have. I kind of kind of feel like I missed the boat. Oh, I know what I want to ask you, Cody. Did your friend's dad work for Nintendo? How did he get those cards so early?
No, he didn't. I don't know what he did.
His uncle.
You know, I live not too far from New York, so maybe they were selling over there or something. But I was like, oh, this guy's the coolest person in the world. He had like a Totodile thing like 6 months before he even knew what it was. And then not too short after, they started to become more popular. But I don't know. The Japanese cards look so much cooler too with the language on it, so they just looked awesome.
Yeah, I did always like the Japanese versions of the Pokemon cards. Even like the poses of them sometimes were a bit more active, you know.
Yeah,
poses. And anyways,
oh, that's awesome. I take it you guys, just from hearing the enthusiasm you have, I take it you caught them all, or did you?
Oh man, it's sort of interesting. Like, yeah, I am such a Pokemon fan, but like honestly, catching them all wasn't always my main goal. It's kind of weird because that is like one of the goals of the stated goals of the game. But I don't know. Like I played Pokemon and I would get kind of my core six, and you know I'd play through the Elite Four quite a bit. Yeah, again. You know, I feel like, you know, you feel like an old person. Like back in my day, we didn't have an experience share, you know, or at least an experience share that worked how it does now. You know, which it just gives you experience for everything. It's like, oh, you caught a Pokemon. Here's some experience. It's like, whoa, okay, well, that's fine.
I'm a fan of that as a lead
yeah. Arrival. it is really nice because like I remember the days where you basically just had to grind the Elite Four. Like if you wanted to level your Pokemon up past 60, 70, 80, 90. Like there were occasionally some times, Cody, that I got some Pokemon up to level 100. Like I was like, oh, I want to max them out. Let's get to level 100. I remember I did that with, I think I had a Gengar that was level 100. I think I had a Pikachu that was 100, Blastoise, Gyarados, you know, some of those.
There's no missing though back then too for this generation. They kind of cleaned it up so you couldn't cheat like you couldn't Red and Blue.
Yeah.
It's also this is a generation also that so to Trent's question, when I was a kid I did not do it, and replays I have caught them all. Mm-hmm. But this game had a few different interesting evolution techniques. So unless you had like another game you were playing simultaneously and trading back and forth, it was like tough. Like Scyther, he had like the metal coat, he get traded, like held items was a thing. I think this is when like friendship could have evolved too, because you get Umbreon and Espeon from the evolutions.
Yep.
So a bunch of different like interesting things. So I didn't get them all at first. What I did though is I was like, I remember distinctly having like a team, like having a hard time picking who my six would be, because I thought so many of them looked awesome. And then I finally got a Tyranitar, and I was like, well, this guy needs to be on it too, because he's just like the coolest.
Tyranitar is the best. One of the best. Yeah. My favorite design.
Really is. I think, like, what are they called? Like, Suedo Legendaries or whatever, or Pseudo Legendaries. Like, he's my favorite. He's just such a monster. The Earthquake always is is great with him. So, no, I never beat it by catching them all, but I would definitely, like, go through runs of the Elite Four with changing up who my Pokemon would be, and then, you know. One of the reasons why I love this game so much is that, you know, you beat the first eight games and then you do the original ones from Kanto right afterwards. I was like, oh, this is so cool. Because there's like a, when you're a kid and you're playing a game like this, there's like a sadness almost that the game's over, because so much of it is like you have these things to look forward to, these next achievements. They're like, oh, no, never mind. Here's eight more gyms you can beat. Yeah. And they're also like scaled levels too. So like the ninth gym leader is going to have like level 50 Pokemon. So it's like it was challenging, which... You know, especially for early Pokemon games, you didn't encounter that much outside of the Elite Four.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, much of that challenge has been lost, you know, much to early Pokemon fans' chagrin. Like, you know, we kind of miss some difficulty, you know, like there's got to be some difficulty, and a lot of the newer games just haven't had that as much. And yeah, to have 16 badges, Trev, like you... That's just amazing. Like to come off of the first game, like they're almost giving you too much, right? These are the second gen in this series, and they're giving you double the gems you had in the first game. It's unsustainable, right? And next one, are we gonna get 32 gems? You know, like it. Obviously, we didn't, but And learning years later that Satoru Iwata was responsible for that. Like he helped the Pokemon company port that content, like to be able to fit all of that data on the cartridge. Iwata-san, like, I guess helped make that happen at that time, which I think is really cool. It's one of the cool mini gifts that Iwata has given us over the years. But
nice. You got me thinking, just talking about like the challenge, and you guys would know because I've only played games where the experience share is the default. But when did they first introduce that, and was there a time you could like turn it off? Was it optional?
I think, and Justin, correct me if I'm wrong, it was like a held item you could have. So I think at the beginning, it was one you could give to a single Pokemon.
Yes.
And it wasn't like that much either. And I forget which generation. It might have been this generation. Not the third one.
I believe it was introduced in Gen 2. Yeah, but I think you got it later on. It was a held item, so you basically had to just give it to a single... I don't think it affected all of, well, yeah, maybe I'm not remembering it quite well, but
I mean, I put you guys on the spot. I was just curious because I'm like,
that's a good point, because that it does help, like, especially for like this game in particular. It would have been a lot more helpful too, because you need to have a strong team to get through it at the end of spoiler alert, this game came out like 20 something years ago, but at the end of beating the 16th badge, you fight Red, who's like Ash Ketchum, essentially. And he's got like a leveled 80 Pikachu or something.
Sorry, spoilers.
Sorry about that. But I don't even think, I'm thinking about some other games, and I don't know how many other games you fight a computer player that has a Pokemon level that high. I'm having a hard time thinking of it at the top of my head that's anywhere close to that.
Yeah, I don't think they've done that since. Like, and that was also one of the rare cases that they sort of crossed over with the show, with the anime. Like, now granted, I remember in the anime they did have Ho-Oh, right? Ho-Oh was like...
Yeah, first episode.
The first episode. That's what was so crazy too. Like, you're watching the Pokemon series and you're like, oh, what's that Pokemon? And like, come to find out later, you're like, wait, they had a Gen 2 design, in the very first episode of, the anime that's focused just on, primarily on Gen 1. But it was pretty awesome that they had that early. It's like when you watch Futurama and you realize that Nibbler was there the whole time, and and you're like, you go back to the first episode, you're like, yeah, sorry. and you're like, is Nibbler Shadow there the whole time? Like, you go back to the original episode, Nibbler's there. Nibbler Shadow's there. And I'm like, that's just cool. That's, it's cool. And
there was no internet back then either. Yeah. So I remember playing that game and be like, okay, where's the legendary from the first? Because it's not Zapdos, Moltres, or Articuno when I'm playing Red and Blue. I'm like, what was that thing that Ash saw? Yes. And they waited, from that coming out in America to, it was like 5 years between that and Gold and Silver coming out. So they definitely long played it, but it was a worthwhile payoff.
Yeah, such a good payoff. And I did look it up. It was almost a year. So Gold and Silver came out in November of 99. And then came out in the U.S. and other regions in October the following year. So October 2000. Long time to wait. But like the starters, like I don't know, like we need to start somewhere, I guess. But like the starters, Trev, Cyndaquil, Totodile,
Chikorita.
I mean, like all three of them. Just really good starters, really good evolution series for all of them. I think I probably played through. Yeah, I definitely played through once with all of them. Just to get them all I think I probably went for 100% Pokedex completion, maybe more when like Heart Gold, Soul Silver came out. But it was a little difficult back then to just find someone to trade at that same level, and You know, get some of those harder to reach.
Friendship evolutions are a lot harder too, because you didn't have as many things to like give them or help them out instead of putting them in the front of your party.
Yep.
To get them up there too. But no, I agree with the story. I mean, I think it's safe to say, I mean, maybe Kanto, but you got to like take nostalgia away from it. But like, as far as like all three, this might be the three best, like all together, designs and just, I don't know. I have a soft spot in my heart for all of them, but Typhlosion was just so sick. Just completely different, really original design, especially if you look at like all the other fire Pokemon that have come since. Like, it's not just like some, you know, walking like fire animal. It's like a little different. The flames on its back are really cool. Quilava, which is a really cool mid-level one too, which a lot of times Game Freak just kind of skips over. Yeah. And Feraligatr was also really cool too. I like that a lot. But it, one of the things, and not to get on a tangent, but the newest Pokemon Snap game did Meganium and Typhlosion and Feraligatr all like a really great service with how they represented them. They all had really cool features in it. And I forget, like Feraligatr's in the DLC of Pokemon Snap, and I was like, this is such a cool design starter, and I kind of wish he was involved more. Some giant angry like water crocodile, I don't know, he's just such a cool design. I wish that they incorporated him more, because I think he's really awesome with, you know, his look, and he's pretty good as far as like a battling Pokemon as well.
I think you touched on it too, but the second evolutions for the starters were really solid. I do remember like it seems like in later Pokemon generations they haven't been nearly as striking, but yeah, Croconaw was really interesting. Like they had a bit more visual differentiation. Sometimes the second evolutions in modern Pokemon games are a bit more like they're very much intermediate ones, you know, like a stepping stone to the next one. Yeah, exactly.
What'd you guys think of the you know, it's cool you can go back to Kanto, but what'd you think of the new region?
I mean, Johto is I love the layout. I loved when you got to Hoa was in that town that had like the big tall pagoda, right? Isn't that where Hoa was at the top of
burned building?
And that was I kind of liked the layout. It was very unique. Like even when you came across like was it Sudowoodo you come across and you can't cut the tree,
the water bottle,
and like there's just some real interesting routes in that. I don't know, like I remember just getting into the grass in that game and just the initial areas and just like, you know, like sometimes the routes are not that interesting, but I thought there were some really interesting ones with kind of these little mazes and trees. There was a lot of trainer placements that were kind of crazy around you. Like, I don't know, it was just a really fun level world layout. And then to still have like the Gen 1 world, you know, still as a part of it was, incredible. So.
No, I think also too, like one thing that they really did, and this game's a little different because when you include like the Kanto Pokemon, there's like 11 or 12 legendaries in this. But they incorporated a lot more in the story. Like when you play Red and Blue, like you walk by the cave that Mewtwo's in Cerulean City, like you fight those guys in the bridge. You never pay attention to it. It blends in just like it's part of like the backdrop. But there's a lot of like they really like kind of hint at all of the side quests, kind of, or whatever you want to call them, with like the legendaries in this game, like the mansions that Hoa and Lugia both stay at. Also too, that you can get both of them, which is so sick. That you get both covered legendaries. One's just level 40, the other one's level 70, which has never been done since, where you can get both cover Pokemon. Another reason why this game is so awesome. But the unknown thing too, I mean, the unknown thing was so weird, but it was so cool too, like the unknown Pokemon. Was there like 20 or something, like there's more than that, like all those designs, but like having like its own cave of just like the unknown Pokemon dedicated to that. was so cool, and it was pretty early in the game too. But it's what makes this region just so fun. Like, they really were creative with this, and I don't know, just, they took a lot of chances that I wish kind of they would do more with games since, because that's why I think this game is so fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. We are going to have to probably sooner than later move on just for the sake of time, but yeah. I know there's a ton more stuff about these games that you guys could probably say, so rather than any formal topic or question, let's just open the floor. Anything you haven't had a chance to talk about yet, do it now in the next 6 or 7 minutes.
I did want to talk about some of the designs. Again, like Cody was saying, this is... You know how, like, you know, when you think of, like, your favorites of something, sometimes your favorites are the fact that there's just so many of the Pokemon in this generation that were really good designs. Like I don't, like, there's not a lot of that I would, you know, I would like pretty much any of them in my party, right? Like, there's not a whole lot that I would be like, you know, they're really, really good designs. The Ampharos line I thought was really fun for Electric. Cool. Like Ampharos, like every time I see Mareep somewhere, I'm like, oh, I'm getting Ampharos. This is awesome. You know, like, it's still one of my favorite. Yeah, the unknown Pokemon, like Trev, if you get a chance to play, you know, even if you do it through Heart Gold, Soul Silver, although, hey, maybe next week, you know, maybe the Pokemon Company will announce Pokemon games on the Nintendo Switch Online service. Who knows? That would be really, it'd be a really cool way to, like, if there's a way to link it to Pokemon Home, and so you could play, like, the original Game Boy ones, trade them to Pokemon Home, and then get them in, you know, Scarlet and Violet. Anyways, that'd just be some cool time traveling going on. But yeah, like, even
see our prediction.
Yeah, even like Caesar, like a evolution to Scyther. Like, Scyther's already pretty amazing, and Caesar, like, he's an awesome Pokemon. Heracross, Ursa, Slugma, Magcargo is really interesting. I like the Piloswine line. I love the names of those. Octillery. Phanpy, Donphan. I mean, getting some elephant Pokemon in there, but I mean, Tyranitar and the legendary dogs. Just amazing. And you know, like, what was crazy is you kind of know they're in the game, but you get, like, these just really rare glimpses. So, Trev, when you see the legendary dogs, you basically, you have to, like, put him to sleep, Trev, or they immediately run. So, so you'd either have to, like, your first Pokemon...
Put a dog to sleep?
Yeah, that does sound bad, doesn't it? basically, they're one of the more skittish Pokemon. So, I think Abra was another one that would...
teleport.
Yeah, that would just teleport away. So, you basically... Your first move had to be a Pokeball, or you had to, you know, put them to sleep. Yeah, it sounds bad, but yeah, you'd have to inflict sleep on them, Trev.
They were also level 40 too, so they were like, it wasn't like they were just like level 10. Like, they're level 40 Pokemon that are legendaries.
Yeah.
So, like, you had to just, like, hope that an Ultra Ball would work. But, and the way that this worked, Trev, is, like, you had to look up. So once you saw it for the first time. Yep. So you see all three that run away, and then you just run into them with random grass. So you can either be, like, on the first town where, like, everything else is level 2, and all of a sudden you have, like, a level 40 Entei, like, popping up out of nowhere. Yep. Or you're, like, then you go plateau and it pops up too. But after you see it for the first time, you have to track its territory on its Pokedex, which is just a region. It's not saying exactly where it is, and hope that you run into it in time before it moves it to somewhere else. And then there's one move that you can use to catch it called to prevent from running, which is Mean Look. Which I don't even know if that was in Gen 2 or not, think of it. I think actually it was, which prevented it from running away. But it was really tough. Those were, like, impossible to catch. So that's one of the reasons why I never filled out the Pokedex either when I was young.
Yeah. And it was pretty formidable when you saw them. Remember that they couldn't. They can only fill so many pixels for the sprite where the Pokemon shows up when you randomly encounter it in the grass, right? So again, you're not seeing the Pokemon like you are in modern games. you're getting a flash of light, and then it goes into the battle, and then, but typically when you saw the legendary dogs, they like took up the entire sprite frame, you know, like they're, yeah. they just looked immense. You're like, whoa, what is this Pokemon? And yeah, like, and it could surprise you. Like, I'm pretty sure I encountered one of them like fairly early on, and I was like, whoa, what is this thing? You know? And I'm like, but it's just some of that surprise and discovery, and then just the mystery and the fun of trying to catch them. Like, it was kind of cool to like read their little entries and like, oh, okay, I gotta find the region, I gotta, you know, kind of plan this out. I don't know, it just had a bit more interesting way to, you know, both encounter them and catch them. So anyways, Gen 2, fantastic, everyone needs to play them.
So. Yeah, and real quick before we move on to this, one thing I would say about these are just like, not just the, like, one, they introduced two new types, so Dark and Steel, which is really cool. And they didn't just introduce like one Pokemon, they introduced some really cool ones, so like Scizor or Steelix, Umbreon, which is awesome, and then Houndoom, which I think is one of my favorite ones too. So a lot of cool types, and also a lot of multi-types too. So this is kind of where they took the next step of like, okay, so we're not just gonna have everything like water, fire, green, grass, or whatever. Like, a lot of multi-types in this game, which became like a constant moving forward for the Pokemon series too. So it's really fun and kind of cool ways to strategize as well.
Nice. I'm a hypocrite because I did say we had to move on, but just when I know, Justin, I think you mentioned it, about the remakes that they did on the DS. What made them, you know, other than obviously the technological advances, what made them unique? And I'm assuming that would be the place to start if you missed this, you know, the first time through, right?
Yeah, like,
assuming you can afford them, I know they're expensive.
Because even if you can find the DS games, they're still pretty pricey. Like, and that's the thing, there's a lot of bootleg copies out there, you know, so you kind of have to be careful. There's people selling, you know, kind of you know, they just have kind of a cartridge and they've installed the ROM on there themselves and they're selling it for cheaper. But so even if, like, if you found a genuine cart, even if Heart Gold and Soul Silver, those are going to be $80 to $100 used, you know, maybe more. So, you know, honestly, that's you know, the best place to play these might be if Nintendo releases them digitally officially, you know. Anyways, but the DS versions of the games, it is definitely good to touch on, because one of the big things that they added in the box for sure was the Pokéwalker, Trev. So you had this little do you remember that? So they had the Pokéwalker. It was a fun little device. It was basically, this was, you know, well before Pokemon Go, but it was a way for you to transfer Pokemon to the Pokéwalker. And you could, I think you could level up eggs, you could do some other things of just walking around with them. They would get experience points and other stuff like that. But it was just a really fun way to, you know, especially kids going to school, like, you're like, oh, I'm just going to, yeah, transfer a Pokemon onto the Pokéwalker, throw it in my backpack, and just the jostling of the, you know, Pokéwalker, you know, or in your pocket or whatever would get you some, it was just a cool concept, you know. So if you can find it, that's the thing, Trev, if you can find, you know, like, it's probably $80 or $100 just for the cart, you know. If you can find a complete in-box set, that may be a little bit more. I don't know, like, it may be good looking at some retro game stores nearby that might have a complete in-box set. But the Pokéwalker was, it was a lot of fun. That was one of the unique things about the DS versions. They did try to keep most of the, like, the level layout in Heart Gold and Soul Silver, and even some of the other DS ones that, some of the other remakes, they tried to make it kind of a one-to-one scale-wise. So, you know, the world, the graphics didn't change too much. You know, obviously it's improved in the DS versions, but you got much better animations for the moves and all of that, but you know, it's largely the same scale of the world. But there's the added immersion to the kind of the pseudo 3D top-down isometric view that they did on the DS games. But anyways, I don't know, Cody, what did you think of the Heart Gold and Soul Silver?
Yeah, they were good. I mean, I thought that, you know, they kind of kept things going. You know, it's hard to make things, like, you know, much better, but the graphics were good. Sorry, I have a crying toddler in the background if you guys are hearing that. But no, I thought it was great. And I thought it was important that they were able to kind of keep the keep what was, like, important about the game, too. So
yeah.
I really enjoyed it, and I thought that they did it justice. And to your point, too, I hope that they do bring these back for Switch, hopefully next week, because it's definitely one of the games I'm looking most forward to playing on my TV.
Yeah.
I was actually looking up. Justin, you reviewed Heart Gold, Soul Silver way back in the day on Pure Nintendo.
Really?
You gave them a 9.7. What kind of crazy number is that? Out of 10.
We were on a 100-point scale apparently then. That's, yeah. That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Anyone listening, look up this review from 13 years ago.
Really?
One thing I want to say about Gen 2 before, it's like one of the most scarring things, and it's kind of become like a meme in the Pokemon community, is Whitney's Miltank. So, Trev, when you face like in right before the second or third gym leader, like everything's like level 20, and you face this gym leader as a Miltank, which is a new Pokemon for this generation. It's a cow, and it's this move called Rollout. And the way that Rollout works is you just keep attacking harder and harder, but the Pokemon can't change its move. So after like the third.
Oh yeah, I remember Rollout from some of the new ones.
It was like, I mean, it just knocked everyone out.
Before it started.
Yeah, I got crushed, like, and it was, like, one of the harder, I think, Pokemon battles I've ever had was facing Whitney's Miltank and finally finding a way to defeat it, because that moveset was just crazy.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, I forgot they did have the 2v2 battles, which I guess were from some of the DS games, too, but it was cool to have those kind of included, but... man, the game did look pretty amazing. Like the fall colors in Heart Gold and Soul Silver, man, on the trees and the leaves falling on the ground, man. That
I was looking at that screenshot, it kind of pops.
Yeah, and I forgot that they did also have the Pokemon able to follow you around.
Yeah,
which was really cool. So yeah, man, if you could find the DS versions, man, I keep dreaming someday Nintendo will add the DS to the Nintendo Switch Online, like just have the Switch, you know, in a vertical orientation like you see for some of those the scrolling shooter games, you know, shmups, shoot 'em ups.
Tate mode.
Yeah, like if they had a little like a grip, a way you could, you know, put it in that mode, like they could do the DS that way, and they'd even have the touchscreen functionality on the bottom part of the screen, right? You know, or that could be really interesting.
Well, even if they did like the Wii U method, it wasn't ideal, but
yeah,
it did work. Uh-huh. And you know, like they had some of the, was it Pokemon Ranger? Those games were on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's different ways they could do it. Yeah, Cody, I think your toddler's crying there, not because of teething, but because we do have to move on.
Okay.
Fortunately, I'm watching the clock here. We're already 40 minutes in, so if we do have to cut this next gen a little short, don't worry, we'll pick it back up in the next episode. But it is time to move on to the GBA, the Game Boy Advance. I gotta imagine, we talked about how Game Boy Color was such a step up from black and white. I gotta imagine on the GBA the first time, it was like, wow.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Going to the Game Boy Advance. I think probably the biggest thing, obviously the detail in the world went up quite a bit, but I think I remember like more the moves in this gen went up quite a bit. I feel like the animations got that much better.
Like shadows and water and stuff like that when you walk by it.
Oh
like,
yeah, it really and then they have a little bit of reflection. Yeah, reflection, yeah. Shadow. Yeah, all that. Like it was a lot of added visual detail there. Yeah, it definitely was a big step up from Game Boy Color. Yeah, I don't know. What'd you think, Cody?
Yeah, no. I mean, it was. It was great. I mean, it wasn't just like the layout was great. The Pokemon kind of took on a life of their own too, and we'll get to it, I'm sure, also. But like the design of some of these are some of the best that Game Freak's ever done for Gen 3, especially the bless you, especially the legendaries. The legendaries are so sick in this game.
Yes.
Like kind of like Gold and Silver, they took a lot of risks that I kind of wish that they continue to do for further generations. But there were eight legendaries in this game, if you include the red, and not including the Regis. So it's an awesome game with a lot of really fun graphics and a lot of cool move sets too. But some of these Pokemon and the spin-offs that came from it too were great.
Yeah, I remember the region.
How do you pronounce?
Go
Oh,
ahead.
go ahead.
Go ahead, Trey.
I was just gonna say, how do you pronounce the region for this one?
Hoenn? I would say
Oh, yeah.
Hoenn.
One? Okay. Well, yeah, go ahead, Justin. Sorry about that.
No. I remember the world map, like there was a lot of water. I remember I like more than any other Pokemon map, there was a big focus on water, and there was a whole like wasn't there a whole like underwater area? Like you could basically go. So they had like typically like even in the first gen, Trev, you could surf, right? There was lots of routes that were going across the water, Cinnabar Islands, that type of thing. But in Ruby and Sapphire, they had like underwater caves and like kind of deep water areas you could explore. So it was interesting, and there was a lot on the water. Like I don't know, I'd say probably 30 or 40% of the game is kind of around these islands and you know, kind of off land a little bit.
Would you say that there was too much water?
No, I think it was still really good. The you know, I think at times, like if you wanted to, I mean, you could still fly anywhere you wanted once you got that the fly HM move. That's another thing of the past too, are the HMs. They don't really have those anymore, but that was a time where you got, so you have TMs, Trev, that you know are like the actual moves, you know, a lot of the moves in the game, but then the HMs would be, you know, cut and fly and surf and all of those, and they actually had to take up a spot too in your move set. So, you know, you'd often was Bidoof in this one? Was Bidoof Gen 3?
I don't think so.
It
This
was for
was
Gen 4.
this is
You understand that reference though, because I know him.
Yeah, Bidoof. Yeah, he's Gen 4. Okay. I was thinking of like, but typically like Bidoof or Bidoof-like Pokemon were like my HM guys. You know, like you basically could they could learn almost any HM, and you just kind of load up their four move sets with. I feel like Sentret and Ferret and some of them.
This had eight HMs too. This is one that had Waterfall and Dive also,
That's
and Rock
right.
Smash. So this is the one that had the most HMs, I think, of any game, which was annoying because you had to like find some of the moves. Like Surf is like one of the best water moves, and Fly is a really good move, and Strength is fine, but like Flash and Dive weren't fantastic, and you had to like, just give you a Pokemon that you were just like, okay, well, this is just taking up a valuable move spot now just to make sure that I can cross this like waterfall just to get to this point.
And some of them, like to explore some of those deep areas, to you know have dive, and then you go into another underwater cave that may have a waterfall, and you know, it was quite a bit. I did love having the legendaries, you know, factoring in with the water. I think that was kind of cool to have Kyogre and Groudon kind of out there. I love what they did even in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire with making them a bit more primal and, you know, updating their designs a little bit. It felt like they were coming out of the earth a little bit, and it was kind of cool. But
One of the better
That's a nice
stories.
segue.
Pardon?
I was gonna say that's a nice segue to talk about the legendaries. Did this game have the most up until that
Well,
point?
it's different because Gold and Silver like took the ones from the first one, but this one had the most original ones, I think, because you had Deoxys, Jirachi, Rayquaza, I'm mispronouncing some of these. Groudon, Kyogre,
yeah.
Latios, and Latias. Yes. And then the Regis as well. So Regirock, Regice, and Registeel. That I guess are legendaries because there's only one of them. But that's kind of like, I don't know. What do you think, Justin? Are those legendaries?
Yeah, I would say. So there's, were there different designations? There was like legendary and mythical. Did they start that in Gen 3? There was some reasoning for them differentiating between a legendary and a mythical, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, I forget. What that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's 10 legendaries, and if you count them, which I think is the most, which is pretty cool. A lot of movies, too. This game created a lot of movies off these legendaries, and Deoxys is so cool. I kind of wish there was more of a focus on those Pokemon in later generations. I thought the story was really cool. But Rayquaza is, I do Pokemon Home. So like you can do trades and Wonder Box trades with people from all over the world. And I got a shiny Rayquaza from someone for like nothing, which is one of the cooler shines. It's black. It's like with just like the yellow, like lightning bolts on the side. I think Rayquaza is awesome, kind of like an traditional dragon-looking Pokemon that's the biggest, like, size-wise, I think the tallest Pokemon. But I love the legendaries, and that's why I think there is so much water, because, like, Kyogre is supposed to, like, take over the ocean versus the ground. Yeah. I think both of their designs are so cool. I think the story is so cool that incorporates them as well. Really just a great, like, your rivals in this too, with like Team Magma and all of them. It's just such, all of it incorporates itself so well together, where, you know, take a game like Sword and Shield where it just felt like they kind of made up the story in like the last second. Like I feel like this was like the story and the legendaries were all like on the same page when they were developing this game.
Yeah
did, man. You have I'm sorry, no, keep going.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, did you have is there a favorite, or is it like picking your favorite kid? You love them all.
I love Rayquaza. I think Rayquaza is awesome. The Rayquaza is my favorite legendary Pokemon. I don't know. What about you, Justin?
Rayquaza was awesome. I liked Groudon's design quite a bit. As far as like box legendaries go, I liked him a lot. But Rayquaza, I really liked the, you know, this, the, it kind of helped establish some of that third legendary, right? Because previously you just have the, I guess in Gen 1 you didn't have legendaries on there. You had, you know, some of the starter third evolutions. But in Gen 2 you had Ho-Oh and Lugia. And, you know, you do have some other legendaries around that, but it felt like in Gen 3, they're like, all right, you kind of have this, when they did like Pokemon X and Y, they had like the X, Y, and then the Z Pokemon, right? So there's a lot of that where, like, even nowadays, we're kind of expecting that even for Scarlet and Violet, there's probably going to be some third big legendary, right? That's kind of...
There wasn't one in there.
There was?
I'm hoping that. Like, no, I'm shocked there wasn't one, to your point. I'm waiting for.
Yeah, like it, and typically they have that third one that's kind of on par with the box legendaries, so to speak, right? Like, so, yeah, Rayquaza was kind of, you know, similar to that, if not more so, right? And Zygarde from X and Y was kind of, you know, hey, he's that next level up, right? But.
And you know what's, I just revisiting it. Do you remember how you catch the Regis in the game? It's so ridiculous. Like, how you have to... So the Regis were, like, these elemental Pokemon. There's Regirock, Regice, and Registeel. And I just revisited it because I forgot. I know there was a lot of steps that went into it.
Yeah.
But after you beat the Elite Four, you need to catch a... trying to pronounce the name of it correctly. It's Relicanth or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, very rare Pokemon. There's a 5% chance of catching it in some random area you dive into, like in the ocean part you're talking about in Route 124. Mm-hmm. So you have to catch that. And then we were talking about before about leveling up Pokemon too. Then you need to evolve your Wilmer into a Wailord, which doesn't evolve that until level 40. So like just catching two very random Pokemon on top of beating the game, and then you have to talk to a few random people and go to a few different caves and stuff like that. It's cool because it's kind of took me back to when you find Missing No and Red and Blue, like all the steps that go into it, even though this is like the game was intended for it. But it was just such a random thing that was time consuming, but you're rewarded because you get access to these three really cool Pokemon that are very interesting and have kind of been a staple in the Pokemon lore as generations go on. They've even added, I think, three more Regis since then, while some of the other ones like Latios and Latias, and I mean, I haven't heard or seen Jirachi really in a game outside of Pokemon Snap since these generations as well, too. So it's cool that they kind of stood up and lasted that long.
Yeah, they were really cool. Like, they were these kind of... they don't have a lot of those kind of mission-oriented Pokemon where you really have a lot of steps or it's this, you know... it felt like a quest, sort of, so to speak, to get these Pokemon. Because even some of the legendaries are kind of... They're kind of telegraphed through the story of where you can find them, you know? Like, oh, yeah, Ho-Oh's hanging out in this tower. Okay, I guess I'll go to the top of the tower. You know, like, it... You know, it wasn't that difficult, you know, to find some of the box legendaries, but to have these, you know, because I feel like these Regice, Regirock, Rock, Registeel, it kind of set that tone for some of the later games to, like, what was it, like the Tornadus and Thundurus and like that whole like trio, they're very difficult to catch too.
They have different forms too. Those things are so weird. I love those guys. Legend Arceus also, the fourth one you get. It was the funnest parts of Arceus for me was them in the post game.
Oh yeah, and it's cool having those. I'm glad that it almost this Gen 3 kind of introduced maybe some of the first. I guess you always had some post game. Like I guess we consider Mewtwo post game, right? You know, going to see him in the cave, but. Yeah, like you need some good compelling content like afterwards, you know. Some people are just going to beeline it to the Elite Four, but to have some really compelling, interesting Pokemon to seek out, you know, is just like keeps the game fun for a long time.
I gotta ask, maybe, and the timing maybe doesn't sync up, but the Regi Pokemon, it's not any connection to, when did Regi join Nintendo?
No.
Connection there?
No. Yeah. No,
he. Thanks. That'd be a nice homage though, if there was. I think he joined before, I believe. But.
Yeah. So
I was trying to look. I'm like, probably not, but I don't know.
I do remember like Reggie's introduction was that infamous 2004, wasn't it? With Twilight Princess, and they showed off Resident Evil 4 for the GameCube and all of that. I think was Ruby and Sapphire 2003 or 2004. I'll have to look at it. 2000.
It looks like ended 2003. He joined in December 2003.
Yeah.
Okay. So it came out 2002.
Yep. Yeah. So. Yeah. Japan, November 2002, and they started to get closer. So Gen 3, it was March of 2003. So there was just about four or five month gap there.
Okay.
But yeah, I think Regi, I do remember Regi having some jokes at some point, like in his tenure of when they were introducing some other Regi, variants, in later Pokemon games. I remember them, you know, just kind of like talking about that. Like, oh yeah, Reggie's got, he's got his Pokemon, you know, but
yeah. Hey, Justin, I'm sorry. How are we doing on time?
We are at 53.
All right, so I checked our last Pokemon Akupa cast to see what we did for time, and we were an hour 10 minutes. with that in mind, I think maybe we got 15 minutes or so. Yeah. I know I feel like there's a lot to talk about, just for the sake of time. Do you guys remember like what your initial starter was, or did you do all three?
I do. I... So I think these starters were great too, but I started with Torchic, and I ended with Blaziken, who's still one of my favorite starters of any Pokemon generation. It's such a cool design, and I think these are also the first time that you had dual type starters. because Blaziken and Swampert, Blaziken was firefighting and Swampert was water ground. And that was really cool too, because instead of having to try to find a Machoke and have a fighting type on my team, now I had a Pokemon that could do both, which I thought was a fun addition to have.
Yeah, I think I started as Torchic as well. Blaziken was fantastic, but I feel like Mudkip was like my second go-to, and then Swampert. The dual types. I love the dual types where it combines some types that are typically, you know, opposites, you know, a little bit. Yeah. Like ground would be weak against water, right? So
yeah.
I like those dual typings, especially.
Eliminate electricity too, so you don't have to worry about like getting hit by like Thundershock or anything.
Yeah, so like that's one of water's biggest weaknesses, right? Is you come up against electric Pokemon, you're like, I'm out, you know. But yeah, with Swampert, you were in the game. But I don't remember doing much with Treecko. I don't know if I did.
Really cool design, though. Really cool design.
Yeah.
Grootmoor might be like the coolest mid-evolution one, I think.
Yeah.
Like in terms of design.
Yeah, and Treecko, I didn't, you know, again, I didn't do much like shiny stuff, but I thought I remember that he had a really interesting shiny color, like a different color tail, and he was a bit more chameleon color, like kind of green blue, and he had like a red tail.
Turquoise, a red tail. Yeah, it's really cool looking.
Yeah. Nice. So I don't know. Again, like the amount of shiny Pokemon that I've caught, I could probably count on like two hands, Trev. Like shiny Pokemon are just, I just never got into that whole grinding for that. But
hey, two hands more than me.
Yeah.
This game, to that point too, sorry to cut, this game really introduced shinies, because the red Gyarados,
yeah, that's right,
really kind of like, oh yeah, by the way, your Game Boys aren't broken. We have alternate colors for all of them too, and it really kind of unlocked that as like a real thing that people started doing. Yeah. And like, to your point, I don't do shiny. It's like, I respect anyone that can do it. Yeah. It just seems like such a time suck, just to like all the breeding and stuff like that, turning the game off and on, especially for starters, like go through everything and then like do all that. But they do look so cool. Like some of them look so awesome, and the red Gyarados is one of the best ones.
Yeah.
For the sake of just watching the clock, we probably should talk about the remakes a bit, which actually this is one I think I could pick up, because I think they're still reasonably priced.
Yeah.
On the 3DS, but yeah, Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire. What'd you guys think of these remakes?
I liked them a lot. I feel like, you know, maybe I noticed the water a bit more in the remakes. Like when I was mentioning it, that it's almost like recent memory, like revisiting them.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, I was like, man, there's a lot of water. You know, I remember. Whereas I think when Ruby and Sapphire came out, I was just like, more Pokemon, this is awesome. What, you know, like I was, you know, just happy. But I think revisiting them, kind of, I was like, man, there was quite a bit of surfing and quite a bit of diving. And
a lot of rain, too. I feel like this game rained more than any other game I've played.
Oh, Pokemon, yeah, ever. Yeah. Yeah, I did like, I loved the designs, a little of design additions they did with Kyogre and Groudon. It was, I thought they were really cool, you know, elements, especially when you first kind of see them, they kind of light up, those yellow streaks and features on them when you see them in the game. But yeah.
The box art is also just awesome too. I mean, one of the cool designs. But no, I agree. I mean, they made a lot of, at this point too, I think they, when this came out, 2014, I think so.
Yeah.
So like, at this point, like, Nintendo was really getting the ball rolling, and like, you know, there and stuff that happened. I mean, what we said, the first one came out in 2002. So like, 12 years had passed. They made a lot of, you know, nice additions, just in terms of like gameplay and graphics and stuff like that. But, I love this story, and they just kind of enhanced it, kind of had like a little kind of 3D view too, with like how it looked, like the layout and the view of the game was definitely different. I thought it was a lot of fun.
And they did.
Hey, that's a good point. How did it look with the, unless you're playing on 2DS or something, how did it look with the 3D? I was really a big fan of the 3DS 3D effects.
Yeah, I like the 3D. I felt like there were some frame rate issues in the when you had the 3D on, but
we're still dealing with that now in every.
That's true. Yeah, like that's true. Yeah, Trev, they should actually. I thought those games had a demo, so you might actually be able to download a demo even of those still on the eShop for the 3DS. But
the next month or so here.
Yeah. But you got to play Gen 2 first, of course, required playing. But
there go all my reviews for the next month.
That's right. were these the ones that introduced Mega Evolution?
Or it was, yes.
Yeah, and Mega Evolution was I after seeing like some of the kind of gimmicks or whatever so-called gimmicks that you'll see Pokemon Company add to the games to each generation. I liked Mega Evolution. I did feel that I wanted to maintain their designs longer, right? Like I wish that I could keep Blaziken in his mega form, And
I agree. I think that this is, of all the gimmicks, this is my favorite one as well.
Yeah.
Because some of these designs, I mean, just look at, like, I mean, one, you have the two Charizards, which is really cool, like the black Charizard with the blue belly. The Blastoise, Gengar were so cool. I didn't love the Mewtwo, so it looked a little creepy, but I agree. I thought these were really cool. The Blaziken one was one of the better ones. And, these, the designs in general for Gen 3 were really great, like, has some of my favorite Pokemon in general in it. Like Ludicolo, Shiftry, Aggron, Salamence, Metagross, and one of my favorite Pokemon of all time, Shedinja, and that kind of showed up too. And a lot of them had Mega Evolutions too, or some of them did, and I thought that was cool. They kind of did them a good service, but I agree. I wish that they kept this for a few more games because I feel like this is better than Z Moves or some of the other things. What's Terra Stones I don't really care for from Scarlet and Violet either. I think those are one of the better like battle gimmicks I had.
Yeah, and it like I remember. Oh, good.
Go ahead.
I always liked I'd watch the Digimon shows some, and I always was like, oh, Pokemon's better than Digimon, but Digimon had some really fun stuff, and I did like when they would show off like evolutions or digi evolutions that were, they had like four or fifth, sometimes six like iterations, right? Like there were some really,
those cartoons with that when they had like, it was like a little like Neopet to like all of a sudden it's like this gigantic like metal, like 80 foot tall, like cyborg thing. And this is the same, a little over the top, but that was fun for me growing up to watch that.
Yeah, I didn't want Pokemon to go that far necessarily, but like when they introduced Mega Evolution, I was like, oh, a fourth form to some favorite Pokemon. Okay, I can be on board with that.
Gengar's, I think I like more than Gengar's design. I think the Gengar Mega Evolution was so cool. I kind of wish that they could keep that.
Yeah.
Do you guys know, I'm looking on like Amazon, and they have a lot of these later 3DS games as World Editions. Those are legit, right? They're just like any region. You guys know?
World Editions.
I haven't heard of that before.
Hey, you look at the case. I'm seeing a lot in the corner. They have an icon like World Edition. They look proper, but because I'm looking at this and it's, you get it like $40. That's what it was. That's reasonable. It's not like it's and inflated, but
I'm
gonna have to look this up. If any of our listeners know, shoot us an email.
I would double check, especially like some of the fine print on some of these is just make sure.
I think that might be for different countries.
It could be for some of the other regions, Trev.
But it says it's, I don't know. I don't want to get too off topic, but just hearing you guys talk, I'm like, I got to play this. So
yeah.
Yeah.
The one with the EXP share, of course.
Yes.
It's me. Yeah. Anyway, back on topic in these last few minutes. Anything we haven't talked about that you want to talk about? Udi, you can kick it off, and then Justin, you can, and then maybe go ahead and wrap us up after that.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, just in general, kind of wrapping up both of these, I think these are some of the better Pokemon generations that have happened. I know a lot of people might disagree with that. A lot of people love, you know, Black and White, and X and Y, and stuff like that. But for me, maybe it's nostalgia. I think these are two of Pokemon's best. Like I said, Gold and Silver are my favorite games of all time. My top three for sure. Just like the exploration, all the things you can do post game and stuff like that. But Ruby and Sapphire didn't really fall too far off that either. The Pokemon designs were really great too, and kind of kept everything going with kind of expanding the lore with all the cool legendaries and pseudo legendaries and great starters and stuff like that. One thing I will say, if you have time, if you're interested in this stuff, look at the creator of Lugia. He wasn't really associated with Game Freak. It was one of the only times it ever happened. They outsourced him for the movie, and then he kind of created it. It's a very weird, fun story in the legends of Pokemon, but these are both great games. Traffic can't recommend playing them. I think if you enjoy any Pokemon game, I know you're playing Arceus, you'll definitely enjoy these as well.
Yeah. Nice. Echoing basically everything Cody said, Gold and Silver, you know, some of it's a little nostalgia, but still, they are still some of the best generation of Pokemon games, I think, even still. Like, again, yeah, Black and White, I think, are some high points. X and Y, I loved a lot. Especially the legendaries, love the X and Y legendaries. But yeah, man, Gold and Silver, even Heart Gold and Soul Silver, great iterations. Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire, you can't go wrong with those if you don't play the originals. But I don't know, I would still recommend playing the originals. I do think you get a deeper appreciation for how far we've come in, you know, these games. And like Cody said, these are still really fun games to play. Like if the Pokemon Company says, hey, Gold and Silver, the original ones are on the Game Boy Color Nintendo Switch Online service, man, I'm going to be picking that up and playing them. Like, that, it's just, they're that good still. Definitely worth playing.
Nice.
Well, thanks, Cody. Thanks, Trev, for joining this awesome memory walk. Like, every time we do one of these, I'm like, man, I need to replay these games. And you know, it would be very fortuitous to have these announced, I guess, just in a few days. Pokemon Day is coming up here. And they've already announced a Pokemon Presents. So
it's the 27th.
Yeah, February 27th. So... stay tuned, everyone. You might get your chance to play these on the Switch if you haven't played these before. Would very highly recommend. It's possible it would only be Gold and Silver, although they have Game Boy Advance on the Switch, so we could get actually Gen 2 and Gen 3, maybe even Gen 1 games like that. That would be awesome. My time is just gonna evaporate though. Where people's wallets start crying, you know, like, oh, my time's crying, you know. anyways, thanks again, Trev and Cody, for joining, and we'll see you guys next time for talking about the next gens in Pokemon series. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for having me.